Hey there, pals and friends and everybody else who somehow found this feed into their listening device. I hope you guys are ready for another awesome episode of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Very excited to bring you another episode that is full of interesting guests. Now, before we do that, let's talk about the sponsors that make this podcast possible. Adirondack Brewery, located in Lake George, New York, right there on Canada Street, one of my favorite places to visit. I make it a point to go there every single time I'm up in the Adirondacks. They have detox and retox yoga in the barrel room and will continue throughout the summer. Upcoming classes on June 25th, July 16th, and July 30th. Spots are still available. For information on how to reserve space, head over to the events page on the Facebook. The next rendition in their Puree series has been tapped at the pub. Puree is a series of American wild ales, aged in oak with a variety of fruit purees. Refreshingly tart, but not overly mouth-puckering. This time around, it's tart cherry. And it's Lake George Restaurant Week, so come check out their three-course menu for only $20.17. That is the Adirondack Brewery, located in Lake George, New York. Now, Susan Robb out of Toronto. She's a woman that has gotten us a lot of really cool guests on this show. Helps us out. Does a really nice job bringing interesting guests to the show, like Coach Jim Johnson and Paul Templer and Bob Rathbun and a whole bunch of different ones. Now, she is out of Toronto, Canada, and lives out her mission to inspire others. Susan is a client partner for the Center for Leadership Studies, original home of situational leadership. CLS is deployed in over 70% of top Fortune 500 companies around the globe. If you want to learn how to build your leadership capacity or hire a speaker for an event, contact her at susan.robb, R-O-B-B, at situational.com. Again, go contact her. Get her to get you someone to speak that'll blow your crowd's mind out of your head. Yeah, that was a little aggressive. Okay. Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. They always have a lot of different rotating beers, seasonally inspired ales. They got 8 beers on tap, and they are always delicious. Go check them out. They got a really cool vibe, put a lot of new murals on the wall, just becoming a better and better spot. Hackettstown, a lot of cool breweries there, so make sure you visit Manskirt Brewing. They're going to be doing the Battleship Beer Festival in New Jersey. It's on the Battleship on the 24th, so please go check them out. Give them some love, Manskirt Brewing. Demented Brewing. Located in Middlesex, New Jersey, one of my favorite tap rooms or tasting rooms in the entire state, if not ever. They do so many cool things between, things on Sunday, releasing new beers on Sundays and doing things on Tuesdays, adding awesome ingredients to their beers. And this Sunday is no different. They just released Bloody Bastard, their Blood Orange IPA. And this coming Sunday, they're going to be releasing Soul Reaper, their American Pale Ale. So please make sure to go check out Demented Brewing. Give them some love on Facebook and Instagram. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Every week we host, I say we because I host at Tap House 15. All over the state of New Jersey, we do different trivia events. You could be dumb. Let's face it. You could be dumb and play trivia and win prizes. Win prizes to the restaurant, win prizes to New Jersey craft breweries. I just said breweries, and it's a great night out. So check out Trivia Revolution on Instagram and Facebook. All right, guys, this week we have a very interesting episode. Just another example of what we do on the show, just getting random guests and finding interesting, passionate people all over the goddamn world. But I mean it, because we're going over the pond again today. But first, we got John Chatterton. He's an underwater diver. He finds treasure, looks for treasure, dives for just a really interesting guy. Give him a listen. He's our second underwater guest in a few weeks. Just very cool. Done some really amazing things. And then we have guys from World Chase Tag, which is making tag a professional sport. Yes, that is correct. So if that doesn't sound interesting, you're a jerk. No, just kidding, guys. Have a listen. Enjoy the podcast.
This is professional diver John Chatterton, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Shame on you.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Should have to do portraits of like all people we know, and then like
have people guess what exactly I was trying to do.
Yeah, guess who this is. Start with Mark Riccadonna.
All right, all right.
He had like floppy curly hair and your Spinal Tap T-shirt. But anyway, I guess welcome back to the show. Might as well start right here, I guess.
Yeah.
Welcome
beginning
back.
Beginning is always a good place to start.
Beginning's the worst. I always hate the beginning.
Yeah.
I never
can
like.
Can we just cut to the end?
I never like starting the podcast, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Always feels weird. Like, okay, how do I ease into this? Do I welcome people? Do I say welcome back? Do I welcome the new people? Do I say hi to you? I guess that's like Radio 101 that I just...
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess after doing 150 of them, there's how many ways can you introduce the show? It's like, oh, we're back again. Ho, 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 you're listening...
Hey-o!
You're listening to the Verbal Shenanigans show. But,
Scott, I'm excited.
Yeah, we're back again, and I'm a little tired, I guess you could say. I do have the coffee going, and not the adult beverages today. Yeah, trying to drop some LBs, you know, before the summer.
Okay.
Have that summer bod going.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
I guess just not die in the sun as you're doing your soccer coaching and stuff.
Yeah, that always comes into effect. But the world's falling apart, Berlu, day by day. Everyone's outraged over something. I mean, let's see. We got Kathy Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
We have Bill Maher.
Yeah, me.
But meanwhile, real things that are happening are terrorist attacks in London.
I guess that's important.
Mr. Met giving a finger. But yeah, I don't know, man. I'm sick of the fake outrage by people. It's just like, come, are you really that offended?
Yeah.
Are you really like, are we offended where people need to lose their jobs and we need to freak out about it? Like, come on. Like, the Kathy Griffin thing, let her take the heat from, like, her employers. Other than that, it's like, is it really affecting your day? Was Barron Trump really so scared of,
I'm more
of
shocked
that photo?
I'm just more shocked Barron was in the same room as his parents for once.
I hate where we are right now. I hate both sides of the aisle.
Scott, CNN News alert, federal contractor charged with leaking classified NSA information on Russian hacking to
a boy.
News section.
Oh, boy. I'm sure this will all just be a big loop that goes to nowhere, as per usual. I mean, just the stories and the Russian hacking. And Donald Trump's just a moron. I gave him a chance. I'm already done with him. He's just, I can't deal with him anymore either.
Yeah, I think most of the people behind him are just... It's kind of like a game show now. It's just, we bid this. We got to put it in.
I just think all Republicans know that the Trump supporters are still, like I said, no matter what you say to them, they don't care what he does. That guy can kill a baby and they'll be like, it was a snowflake. Toughen up. It's just a baby. You know, like
you're for abortion. What's wrong with this?
He's doing it later.
Yeah.
He's doing it for the country. He's got whatever you say. I think the Republicans know that he's still got a humongous following. So they're just sitting behind him, like, you know, they're not really they know he's a nutcase, but I think they see that they can get a lot of their agendas through with him, and they're going to sit back and see how long this shit show lasts, and I think their ultimate goal is to get Pence in.
Maybe down the line. I mean, who knows? I mean, barring something crazy, he'll pretty much try to go for re-election, and if the Democrats do the same thing as last time, just put somebody out there. It's like, I'm not Trump. It's not going to win.
Yeah, or take your one good candidate and just black, you know, just rig the national convention and say, okay, well, he can't win.
Hey, I got the most votes. I got this thing called a super delegate, and he's like really strong, and he supersedes your delegate, so I win.
And it's almost hard to avoid politics at this point because it's in your face. It's never, you know, when we were kids, it was never like this. I didn't even know who my parents voted for when I was a kid. Like, they wouldn't even talk about it, you know? Like,
I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't remember a lot of, I mean, pretty young, not a huge amount of stuff for Reagan. Not really that much for original Bush.
But, I mean,
then Clinton came in.
It's the social media, man. It's everywhere. It's the CNN breaking news tickers and the things that pop up. You can't avoid it. You can't avoid it unless you have no TV, no internet, no phone. Like, you can't avoid it. And it's just draining and annoying. And I just don't care about people's opinions. And
that's our core audience, by the way.
Trump
everybody,
supporters?
No. Oh. Everybody who has nothing.
Oh, because if we had like a big Trump supporter audience, I'd be like, goddamn liberal. I would just go the other way.
InfoWars with Scott Britton.
If it got listens, I would swing the other way, guys.
Oh,
I mean, I'm just saying, we'd be the red state podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I said, I usually guess I would swing to the liberal side, but I don't, like, I can't sit with them. They're just whiny babies, too. Yeah. Oh, Bill Maher said the N-word. I'm so offended. He's a comic. Mm-hmm. Don't laugh at it. Don't watch his show. You're that offended. Okay. Yeah. Meanwhile, every Drake song has the N-word in it every 3 minutes. I know. He's black. I get it. They're black. But still, you're not offended by it when it's said then.
I think Eminem has dropped the N-word in a few of his songs.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, I would have to look it up. I'm not going to proclaim
but
it.
But, like, your best weapon in something like this, if you truly are offended, is don't listen. Don't watch. Mm. Don't, you know. That's your personal choice. Like, why do you got to say your opinion to everybody and make everybody have to agree with you and shout it out on the internet? I don't know.
It's a weird thing. Like, nobody really cares about being right. They just want to be on the side of it to look good. Right. It's like,
I'm gonna be on the winning team.
What are you going to win by, you know, oh, Trump isn't like anti-climate. Okay, 20 years down the road, we found out, yeah, he really fought hard for the climate. What did you win?
What do you win by also,
what do you
like,
care? Like, nobody does research. It's in the old days, it was like, you read 20 different articles, and then after you read the articles, you looked at the person who wrote the article and see what kind of background they had and how legit they are with their storytelling and stuff like that before you officially proclaimed, okay, this is a fact.
And it's even now, worse it's now. A where do you search. Go? Where do you go for, like, the CNN and Fox are just so swung both other, like, what is a reliable news source at this point? Like, I don't think there is one.
I don't think there's really an
independent one. And if one's going to stay, I really feel like if you're going to stay afloat as a news source, you now they know their audience. They're like any other entertainment show. They know that Walking Dead, the demographic is this. These are the commercials we're going to play. That's what CNN is. We know our demographic is lefties. We're going to go breaking news on Trump every damn thing. And you could argue that it's the liberal news sources that got Trump elected. Because they played everything he did wrong all day long. He got more press, more free press than anybody.
Yeah, and he loves it. He brags about it.
So. I mean, he tweets something wrong, and it's the biggest news story in the world. Confife or whatever it was.
Confife.
Like, confife. Now there's a that was a perfect pronunciation of confife. I don't know. It's like, why is everything such a big deal?
And then everybody goes back, oh, we didn't make a mistake. It's an Arabic for we will fly. It's like,
I saw that
what?
One. And someone was like, that's complete bullshit. Like, they just made that up. I don't know, man. Sometimes I just want to go off the grid and shut it all down for a while.
My thing is, I hear something and go, huh. And then I go about my day.
Yeah,
And it comes up in a conversation. And if I'm not liking where the conversation's going, I don't care which side you're on. If it's you're just pretty much, oh, I'm right because all right.
I also right. like, okay, like the Paris agreements. Like, he backed out of that. On the surface, looks like a pretty bad deal. Okay, not only I get the idea of saving money and whatnot. You read what, but when you, I think I don't know. Today in this world, you're such a global economy, right? Like, everything is global. Everybody sees what every country is doing at all times. when the whole world is mocking you because you got out of something you agreed on, like the whole world, you're with Syria and Nicaragua. It's us, Syria and Nicaragua. Like, it's a hard. That's a hard one to swallow.
That's
man.
A party I don't want to go to. Trump, Syria, and Nicaragua. I don't know what.
Call me crazy, but I would try to want to keep my mouth, my country's name, and Syria nowhere near in the same anything.
I mean, where I stand is, even if you don't believe in global warming, I just got to think, why wouldn't... The whole world is kind of moving to, like, looking at solar, looking at wind, stuff like that. Just look at investing that. How many people are going into coal? And in Trump's speech, he talked about, oh, it's unfair how much India and China are using coal, and look how terrible the pollution is and their skies. Then why do you want to keep doing it? You take the coal workers and you say, okay, we're going in this direction. I'm going to give you this job and I'm going to help you out in that way.
Agree. That's why I made a dumb joke. Like I said, I hope Trump care has good care for black lung. Like, why are we going backwards? Like, America, when you think of like the old good parts of America, it's like always pushing forward and innovation, and I don't know.
It'd be great if like 20 years from now everything's like the Will Smith movie Wild Wild West, where there's huge spiders running on coal
and that rap,
taking
and
over.
That rap song steampunk. What was I gonna say? Damn it. Oh yeah, like exact. I agree with you completely. I was just having this conversation the other day. We gotta phase these jobs out without losing the working force. So train them. Put in like a subsidy where you're paying these guys to train them for the future jobs. You know, you're not just cut. Because look, automation's right down the, you know, right around the corner as far as like driving. Automated driving's basically here. Companies are going to be like, boop, you know, I don't need to pay employees. I could just, my Google truck can drive all night long, get things faster to you, safer. You know, it's not falling asleep. It's not on drugs. It's not, doesn't have family stress. It's a robot.
Yeah, so that's truck drivers, bus drivers, taxi drivers, all that fun stuff.
Taxi drivers, truck drivers, shipping trucks. You know, that's right around the corner, believe it, like whether people want to face it or not. It is. You know how many drivers there are in this country, you know, like the trucking industry alone. Like, I can't imagine, like, I don't know, all these. So take that population, work with the companies, and train them for what's new. Train them to be mechanics on the robots and the truck. I don't know. Like, put something in there where you're not going to lose your jobs, guys, but you have to adapt to learning a new trade. You know, like, we're going to put you through trade school or whatever it is, or the training specific for that job.
Or let's just go all in on this and just keep reversing technology, you know, like have people screaming, hey, what's wrong with using wood? What's wrong with throwing rocks at people?
And then I don't know.
Just keep on using the resources.
And then it's like you swing the other way on these fucking terrorist attacks. Like, how do you stop them? I don't think you can.
There's no way. Someone wants to use a vehicle. It's not an official group. It's just some extreme people. They come together. You can't just. It's not like we're a war against a country. We're a war against a group. I'll say Islamic terrorists.
How dare you? Don't say that.
Yeah, radical. But well, I mean, I don't. I'm not stupid enough to say all. I'm not stupid enough to say all Islamics are terrorists. But what? I can sit back and face facts. All right, some of these are involved with these groups and that. And so
wait,
far,
not?
You just.
They're not all terrorists?
No.
Really?
No. My favorite was still after 9/11 where Will Smith brought Muhammad Ali up there and he's like, oh, you do know this is not a terrorist. It's like, no shit there, Will. I really thought Muhammad Ali was flying the one plane.
It'd be great if like a week later you see Muhammad Ali all shaking in a video, like holding a head up, like, we got you. All these years he's been hiding it.
Took him 10 hours to cut off that head, but God bless him. Come on, man.
Come on, man. Just cut it off already. It hurts.
I'm trying.
Yeah, we're going to hell on that one.
Yeah.
But, no, it's just like.
That's not the one we're going to use as the bumper for this episode.
But I just like, you know, yeah. That's where I can side with some conservatives. Stop with the pussyfooting around and being like, it's not Islamic. We can't say it's Islamic. Like, yes, it is.
Yeah.
They're claiming it's for Islam, for Allah. These people. There's something twisted in that region, whatever it is that's going on. That's why I love these women and, like, gay people coming in defense of, like, all this. I was like, don't call it ter-. Like, they stone women and gays. Like, they have no rights in some certain places. Like, you know, choose your battles wisely.
It's,
like,
illegal to be gay in some of these countries.
They throw you off buildings in a couple of them. Like, literally push gay people off buildings. Like, it's freaking awful. It's awful. Yeah. It's just a... I don't know. I'm tired of the fake outrage on things like Kathy Griffin and then like people being stabbed in the middle of the streets in London. And it's like, meh, we're with you, London. Like, that's okay.
I love Kathy Griffin with the, oh, everybody's... Oh,
she's an idiot.
No, terrorizing me. I didn't do anything wrong. You pretended with a fake head to decapitate somebody. By legal written law, you should be arrested. And I'll sit back and say... We saw the same stuff with people putting a noose on
Obama,
on dummies on Obama and all that stuff. That's all in the same category. You're both dumb.
Yeah, she's dumb. She made a dumb choice. Now let those shows be canceled. And trust me, she's going to get it where it hurts.
For the record, show.
Yeah.
And it only appears once a year.
No. Her comedy dates were all canceled. I meant, like, her show.
Oh, that's kind of stupid.
She'll bounce back.
Yeah.
She'll, I guarantee
Kramer came back. She can come back.
Okay, she'll be back, but yeah. I don't know. It's just, are you really that outraged? The Bill Maher thing, like, come on.
Yeah, it was a bad joke. You just sit back and go, dude.
It was just a stupid joke. Like, come on. Like, we're just a nation of wusses.
We are.
We are just a bunch of wusses. And everyone, it's just dividing the country more and more. The more politically correct we got to be, the more it's killing us.
I'm mad. Put on some Ted Nugent music.
Are you offended? What? Let me ask you something. Is our guy calling us?
I gave him the information. I told him we were going to... I emailed him your number, so he should be calling us. Okay. I'll tweet him again, just be like, hey, we're waiting.
Okay. In the meantime, I was thinking about this when I was driving back from the gym today. I was like, what have I ever actually been offended by? Have you actually ever been like, oh my God, like... I am so offended, I'm going to write a letter to the blah, blah, blah. Have you ever actually felt that? About anything?
I'm trying to think. I mean, nothing's
like enough to where it's going to move you to, like, take action. Like, offended.
Can't say I have. I've been pissed off at people for certain things.
Well, of course.
But, I mean, I'm kind of the same way where some people's like, oh, I've unfollowed him because he says this, this, and that. And I'm like, I keep it up there. I look at it, sometimes I go, he's an idiot, sometimes I go, okay, whatever, and, you know, I just, because in the end, when it comes to, like, politics, religion, all that stuff, everybody's going to be very sensitive about the stuff, but in the end, some people are good, some people are bad, and I'm not going to act on a few things and just go, I'm not going to talk to you again, and some people, I just kind of do it just to laugh at them and how stupid they are.
I also think, like, somewhere along the way, we lost the no one's allowed to be wrong. Like,
yeah.
I expect myself, who knows this much about politics, to be wrong 90% of the time. Like, I want candidates and people to educate me. So sometimes when I see something that's the opposite view of mine, I'm like, you know, that's interesting. You know, like, maybe that'll change. Maybe that's true. Like, maybe I should look into that. I don't know anything about politics.
No.
I know. I don't know anything about religion. I don't know if there's something on the other side. So if you have proof, enlighten me. Like, why is everybody going to be so anti-everything?
It's there,
like,
can't stop. Be wrong. Yeah.
This is why there's wars to begin with. Because everyone buys it. Our religion's the best religion. Let's trample over other countries who don't believe in our religion. This freaking country. This is what we did to get here.
We left to...
Move out of the way. You know. You're Catholic reasons. Now. Yeah.
It is what it is. Nobody's going to change. Nobody's going to sit back. I mean,
what do you think changes it? Do you think there's anything that changes the way people treat each other? Do you think a big attack on the United States changes us? Remember how, like, people were after 9/11?
Yeah, we were somber for a few months. Then
there was a togetherness for a little bit.
But and after, I would say, probably November, December, it was probably... Outside of
people going
to New York and seeing the wreckage and stuff like that, for the most part, it's like, okay. I mean,
I agree
with some people who say over in Los Angeles, they weren't thinking it was a big deal just because they're on the other side of the country, and that's the way it always is. You hear about bombs in Iraq and stuff like that, and let's be honest, you're a little bit sad, but you don't sit back and go, okay, I'm going to do something.
It doesn't
affect
your life, no?
Nobody gets motivated by stuff.
So what changes? What would bring people together. I can't even think of something.
The closest I've seen so far is the new Pope basically rethinking
a good job.
You know, the thoughts of
Catholicism. Yeah,
yeah,
that's a good call. He helps. Like that in multiple things. Maybe we just need a big Live Aid concert again. In the videos, they look so together.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we need another like
50 years from now, everybody's holding hands together, black people, Chinese, whites, all that. Father, what? How did this change? Well, Willie Nelson got up on stage, son, and we're like, ooh, yeah. Lord.
Maybe like another Heal the World video, you know, but this time it would be less like Lady
Stop
Gaga.
Stop being assholes.
And the Foo Fighters. And
Stop being dicks.
We hate each other no matter what. Don't you realize politics sucks? Like, they're all assholes. Why doesn't people get that either? They're politicians are liars. That's what they do. They lie to get to the next step. The reason that they get hired is because they lied and made promises to someone else and swayed the room one way each time to win.
Mm.
Maybe they started as a town councilman. They had to convince the town to vote for them. Then they went up to a senator. They had to, you know, get the state. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
you voting politics. Tomorrow?
No.
Nope. Are you off tomorrow?
Nope.
Oh.
No. Maybe I'll vote. I don't know. I got to look it over. I don't really like to vote unless I really actually like look at what I'm doing. Like, I don't like to just go in and just press buttons. Like, I'd have to really maybe do a little mini research before I vote. But
I mean, these are the ones we're supposed to care about the most because they're the ones that really control the votes and how they get up to the president. But we're all the same. It's like, it's not flashy enough for me to care. We need pizzazz. We need like a dance number for me to care about the senator of New Jersey.
Just get Chris Christie out first and I'll be happy. Like, let's just get that.
What's that, next year?
Next year. He's gone. 17. I think the end of this year, maybe.
I think he's a little bit into 2018.
Oh, God. That man. Everybody hates you. But I guess, like, while we're waiting for our guest here, see what's going on with him. That's another thing that pissed me off. Tiger Woods. Okay. Listen.
Sad story.
Okay. Tiger Woods. Okay. The guy messed up 10 years ago, whatever it was. It's been a while now. Okay. His personal life messed up with his wife, you know, with a million girls, blah, 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 blah. He's a world famous superstar. You know, that stuff gets out, it's going to become a big thing. You know, Tiger's been basically irrelevant for a long time now.
Yeah.
Okay? He gets a DUI or whatever. It seems weird. Maybe pills or something like that.
Yeah. No alcohol in the system, but obviously. Have you seen the video of it?
That's what I was getting to. Why is his dash cam footage accessible for us to watch? Why? Why?
I mean, they call it public records for stuff like that, but it is kind of weird that you figure at least the court case would occur before we see them.
Listen, America loves watching people just go to rock bottom. They love it. They cannot get enough of it.
Celebrities. Mostly.
Watching Tiger Woods getting pulled over for a DUI, like, isn't it embarrassing enough? Like, and this is why people develop problems and, like, you know, how does that guy recover from that? Everybody just watches him. Everyone thinks he's a scumbag. Everyone thinks he's a drunk now, and he's got like, America loves just watching, because we all never did anything wrong, right?
No.
We all never made mistakes. I made mistakes before, but I could sit there and look up someone's dash cam. I don't know. It seems such an invasion of privacy to me. It's just like, ugh. You people, like, make me sick. Like, what?
You people?
Yeah, you people.
I'm offended.
Good, of course.
I watch videos, Scott. How dare you?
And, like, I, you know, it was on ESPN's front page, and I'm watching for, like, 30 seconds, and I'm like, enough. That's when this thought came to me. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this guy, you know, obviously he's going through something, you know? You know, you go from the top of the world to where everyone loves you, and you're the best, you know, you're the next big
most
thing.
Most recognizable athlete in the
probably
world.
Probably still is up there. Probably still is most recognizable.
I think I saw a list. I think was ESPN, still like 10th.
I believe it. You still hear that name. People still don't know one other golfer besides Tiger. Like, people who don't watch golf at all.
No Vijay Singh fans?
No. I mean, I let me think. I know Phil.
Phil Nicholson.
Rory McIlroy.
Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, I could probably name 10 if I really tried.
John Daly.
I want to talk to. I just was thinking this the other day. I want to talk to John Daly so bad.
Yeah, he just won a tournament a couple weeks back.
He'd be such a good guest. He's awesome. John Daly is what's right with sports.
Yeah,
he's just himself.
Yeah, he don't care.
He can get hammered, be fat, You know, just, oh, I love
he
that.
He goes out there with the ugliest pants on earth. Everybody's like, oh, that's disgusting. He's like, ha-ha, that's me, that's me.
Yeah. I just, I don't know, I'm just so sick of, like, okay, okay, let the guy make a mistake and recover and get his life together.
I will at least say, I agree with you points. I will say he does have to get help because he's been rock bottom for quite a while. He keeps on talking about how his back is still hurt. I'm kind of wondering if he's addicted to the painkillers.
Yep. Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, it's a guess,
it's
but
an epidemic, you know.
I mean, ever since he had that, I still remember. What was it, about 5-6 years ago when he won the U.S. Open, basically on a broken leg, mm-hmm. and I remember saying, I think that is the greatest feat in sports history.
I think it's guest time. We're supposed
Scott,
to.
Scott, I need to know if it's guest time.
Oh, it's guest time, bro.
Oh, all right. Now I'm into it.
Why don't you light us up with who's coming on the show?
Well, coming to us today is a gentleman who is known as a quote-unquote wreck diver. He was on the History Channel for Deep Sea Detectives and also a part of a special when they were the Titanic's final moments, missing pieces. We are talking to John Chatterton.
Johnny Chatterton. Here we go. Hello?
Scott, John Chatterton.
John Chatterton. Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself, man?
All right, man. This is Scott Brennan here, and this is Mike Berlew on the other line. On the, not the other line, the other microphone.
Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. How's life in the fast lane?
You know, podcasting life, it's fast and furious. What can I tell you?
Yeah, it's a wild ride we have here.
Yep. Scott's sipping coffee. We're
sitting.
Talking about Tiger Woods.
Talking about Tiger Woods. John, your feelings on Tiger Woods. Go. No.
Oh my God.
I feel bad for Tiger. I'm in the I feel bad for Tiger camp. But.
So.
That's not why we brought you on.
No, thank God.
So, John, you, I guess. How can I sum this up? You are you a diver full time, or is this what you do, or is this more of a hobby?
No, I'm a professional diver. I've been a professional diver since 1982, actually, and that's how I earn my living.
Doing what exactly? So do you work for a company? Do you work for your own business?
Like any good commercial diver, I'm in business for myself, but I'm just a hired gun. So, I may work for a company as a salaried employee, but typically, if somebody needs somebody like me, they don't need me forever. So, a lot of my work is contract work, where I will go out and be contracted by somebody to do something. But I also do quite a bit of training. I train scuba divers. And I also get involved with salvage projects, shipwrecks projects. I mean, I my real passion is shipwrecks. So trying to put together projects that somehow, some way, see profit at the end of the road.
Can you describe for us how, when you find something, what's decided about who owns the property, if you will? I mean, I've looked up stuff where you found German submarines, you've gone to pirate ships. How's it determined once you find it? Is it officially yours, or is there a whole chain of command?
You know, I went to commercial dive school in Camden, New Jersey in 1982, and I learned how to dive. I probably should have gone to Seton Hall Law School, because there is no simple answer to that. It's when you find something, where you find it and what it is starts to take on legal ramifications. And it is everything but, you know, jump in the water, find something, and finders keepers. So I have found shipwrecks. I found the World War I passenger liner that was sunk by a German U-boat, and I went to court. I got the legal salvage rights to the wreck and worked the wreck and you know, salvage like the purser safe and all that kind of thing, and all very much legal.
Now when you go to court, who are you going against, like, to get ownership from?
Well, you know, first of all, it's going to be Admiralty Court, which is essentially deals with admiralty law, which is international. In this country, that would be our federal court system. So you go into the federal court system, and prior to coming in and presenting your paperwork and all that kind of thing, you have to fulfill certain requirements. You have to prove your ability to salve, and you also have to try and reach out to anyone who might have rights to the wreck. If a ship sinks tomorrow, you can't just go out and start taking stuff off of it. It's somebody else's stuff.
Right.
There are certain legalities and ownership rights that are afforded to the rightful owners of the property at the time of the sinking. So, typically speaking, if, you know, somebody loses something and you go out and get it, they're going to want, you know, if it's valuable, they want it back. So, there's room in the law for those kind of situations. They have to pay you a certain salvage award and they get their property back. But, most of the older wrecks, what you're dealing with is shipwrecks that were abandoned. And abandoned shipwrecks are something else entirely.
Now, when you are going on, like, these dives for, let's say you were treasure hunting or looking for shipwrecks, what kind of work goes in prior to the dive? Like, how do you decide where you're going? I'm assuming it doesn't just like, hey, we're going to go dive here and look around the water. Like, do you have an idea of where something is? Do you have an area? Did someone give you an area they want you to look for them? Like, or a little bit of everything?
Well, first of all, when it comes to treasure hunting, nobody wants to be a treasure hunter. Treasure hunters, loser. You want to be a treasure finder. Or if you want to really be sophisticated about it, you want to be a commercial archaeologist. And the difference is, you have to put in your time. You have to do your homework. If you think you're going to go out and start looking around the ocean, and guys do this, but, you know, if you're looking for something that people have looked for and not been able to find, you're not going to be successful going out in the same place that everybody else has gone looking for it. So you have to be somewhat creative, and the way to be creative is to be extraordinarily knowledgeable on the subject. What can I find out? Where is there information? What archive has information that I can access? And when you have all of the historical data, then you have to figure it out. It's like a puzzle. So, if you look at the same old data that everybody else is looking at, and you look at it the same old way, you're going to look in the same places that everybody else has looked, and you're not going to find anything. So really, it's about being prepared, but it's also about being creative, trying to figure out. You know, every shipwreck is like a mystery, and if you can solve the mystery, you're going to find the wreck. Or if you have a wreck, you're going to be able to put a name to the wreck.
And when you find a sunken ship, what is generally the procedure? Would you immediately try to go in and look for items, or is it just establish where it's at and then come up with a plan on seeing if there's anything within the vehicle?
It is... Shipwrecks... Every shipwreck is unique. They're like people. You know, people, we can be very similar, but each of us is a unique individual. And that's the way it is with shipwrecks. And how you progress is not necessarily going to be the same on each and every shipwreck. You should have all of your legal access, permitting, contracting, all that lawyer crap should be done before you find anything. And certainly before you start working. It's about being legal. And the bear guys that, go pirate. They're not working within the limits of the law. As a matter of fact, there's a problem in the Pacific right now with salvors going out and actually scrapping entire shipwrecks, military shipwrecks. And they're just selling it for scrap, pre-atomic steel that was made before the first nuclear blast is more valuable for certain scientific purposes and that sort of thing. I don't know whether they're taking advantage of that, but quite literally there are military shipwrecks that are still technically speaking the property of the government that they serve, and if that government no longer exists, it's the subsequent government. So for instance, a Dutch ship belongs to the current Dutch government, if it was a military ship. And it is, technically speaking, according to Admiralty law, a sailor's grave. But these ships have been, there are several of them that have been, the shipwreck was there, it was located, it was explored, it was documented, and now it's gone. There's nothing but a brown stain in the sand.
Now, let's get into it. If you had to give us a couple, of the best or most interesting items you found, I'm sure it's an endless list, considering you said you've been doing it since 82. But if you could give us, one or two things that you think stood out the most to you, what would you tell us?
Well, treasure is, gold is important, diamonds are important. All that kind of stuff. But to tell you the truth, a lot of it, there is a certain, human relationship to a lot of these shipwrecks. I went looking for a World War I passenger liner called the Carolina off the coast of New Jersey. And the Carolina was taking passengers from San Juan, Puerto Rico to New York. And they were set upon by the first wave of German U-boats to cross the Atlantic after the United States entered into the war. And they sank six ships in a single day, the last of which was the passenger liner Carolina. And they German U-boat came to the surface. They started firing on them with the deck gun using low-wave radio transmissions. They told them they had to abandon ship. The people abandoned ship. And 10 10 lifeboats departed with all of the passengers and crew. One of the lifeboats overturned that night. 13 people lost their lives. Most of the lifeboats were picked up either that night or the very next day. 2 days later, one of the lifeboats shows up on the beach in Atlantic City. Newspapers at the time said it seemed like the lifeboat appeared out of nowhere. And it was a huge event. The Shriners were having a convention in town. The Shriners band is playing God Bless America. Women are swooning. They're carrying people through the surf. And these were the first, these were the first sinkings of ships on this side of the Atlantic in World War One. So it was like a big deal. So I went looking for this one ship, basically an intact passenger liner, and I had to figure it out. Now, for me, it was easier in my mind than trying to figure out where one ship was. I was like, well, maybe I should try and figure out all six ships. Maybe it's easier to find six ships than it is just to find one. So I went into the archives. I got some of the original documents of the World War One Germany boat that sank the Carolina. And the captain had made a chart of the six ships that he'd sunk that that day. And, you know, if you've got wrecks in that kind of, you know, he might not have been exact on his coordinates, but using dead reckoning, his positioning for that day was probably close to what it was. And I started, you know, talking to fishermen and saying, I'm looking for six wrecks. And I found a guy who would help me. We went out and found the Carolina, identified it, had the name with brass letters across the stern. And on my second trip out there, I found the purser safe. So I ended up going to court. I got a lawyer, a guy who was a diver who would actually do the work, the legal work, or if I take them to the wreck. So we went to the court, the federal courthouse in Trenton, New Jersey, and they have like a batter up system for the judges. And the judge that was assigned to the case was Judge Joseph Rodriguez. He was the first Hispanic federal court judge in the state of New Jersey. And he was known throughout the courthouse for telling the story of his father coming to America and immigrants taking their oath of citizenship to become nationalized citizens, would listen to the story of Judge Rodriguez's father, a Cuban immigrant coming to America, and how the ship he was traveling on was attacked by a German U-boat, and his father had to take to the lifeboats, and for 2 days they were adrift, and eventually they came ashore in Atlantic City, New Jersey. The judge's father had been on the Carolina.
Wow.
And so, you know, things like that,
right.
You know, I mean, if you're talking about treasure, it's that's something that is unbelievably unique and valuable.
Yeah.
But then again, I also brought up the passengers or the purser safe. You know, diamond rings, a Tiffany diamond ring in a platinum setting, 21 diamonds, another diamond ring with 23 diamonds, diamond and sapphire rings, gold coins, silver coins, $20 gold pieces, $10 gold pieces, $5 gold pieces, $2.50 gold pieces. Gold rosary, everything was gold. The beads were gold. The crucifix was gold, bracelets, gold necklaces, and the wedding band with some initials in it. That I tried to match. I was working with a genealogist, trying to put the put the ring and put some names to the ring, and at least so far we've not been successful.
Hmm. Now, let me ask you, you talk about all these like warships that you've seen. I noticed that you. You were in the Vietnam War, and you've been affected by Agent Orange. Does it affect you mentally in any way when you see, like, these objects of war, or is that just totally out of your mind, a different kind of scenario?
It is much more, you know, I certainly have a certain level of understanding, but at the same time, a significant amount of respect. So I think if I was to say it had any impact on me, I'd say definitely, but in a positive way, not a negative way.
Interesting. Now, we had a underwater crime scene investigator on recently. Mike Berry, his name was. And he just had a lot of interesting stories about, like, not only just the procedures and whatnot it takes to go through a crime scene, but just some of the experiences he went through and how it's just not cut out for everybody, and how he worked with guys the first time they go down, they couldn't do it again. And now you're going into ships, yeah, sure, and stuff like that. What do you think that you have that it takes, like, to do this? And I'm sure you've seen, doing this, you've seen some what most people would think are scary things and whatnot. How do you prepare yourself for that? And also, like, did it take you a while, or were you immediately kind of used to this?
My first hard hat dive, my first dive in helmet, was in an old U.S. Navy Mark V. The Men of Honor suit, big, brass and spun copper, mm-hmm, breastplate, big helmet, all that kind of thing. And my first dive, quite literally, they're lowering me down to the bottom, and I did not think I was going to survive. It was anxiety of a level just this side of unconsciousness. And literally when I kind of felt I was losing it, my feet touched the bottom. And I'm like, okay, well, somehow, some way, I'm on the bottom. And it was like, okay, now what? Okay, let me take a step. Okay, let me take another step. And I think, I'm still doing the same thing. I just keep moving. And it is, that there are definitely things you should be afraid of.
Hmm.
You know, it's not like you're not going to encounter anything potentially dangerous down beneath the surface. But it's like, at the same time, there's a confidence that comes from being prepared and being expert at diving. So I don't people say, you go out there every day and risk your life. I'm like, yeah, most of the time that's driving on I-95 to get down to the boat. But once I get there, I'm okay. I'm safe.
We're both in New Jersey. We do know the fear of I-95, both of us.
Oh my God! I spent 20 years working around New York City, most of that in Manhattan, up in the nuclear power plant up in Indian Point. I worked on the Manhattan Bridge, and I did a lot of work for Con Edison, the Domino Sugar plant on the East River. I worked all around New York for a lot of years, including I was underneath working on a job underneath the World Financial Center across from the World Trade Center, and on 9/11. And you know, it is always been. Diving for me has always been something incredibly exciting and rewarding and interesting, and I think I have been incredibly fortunate,
right,
to have found the thing that, you know, the thing that I do, the thing that you know, that I am, and I don't think everybody kind of has that opportunity.
No, I mean, it is something to say when you find, you know, I'm still looking for exactly what I want to do, and, you know, like what completes me. One day I think it's one thing, one thing I think it's another. But as we get to the end here, I wanted to ask you, what do you have, what's going on now? What kind of projects you working on, or are there certain dives you can tell us about what you're working on? And also, if anybody wants to check your stuff out, where can they go?
Well, you know, I don't like talking too much about what I'm going to do. I like talking about what I've already done.
Right.
Because, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I was successful every day?
Yeah.
But, I've the last 2 years, I've spent a little bit of my summers up in Oak Island, mm-hmm, in Canada, working with the guys, the History Channel show Mystery of Oak Island, and the Lagina brothers, and doing some diving up there for them. We have a couple of projects in the Caribbean that we're trying to get off the ground, and dealing with things like, you know, Caribbean governments and the United Nations and stuff like that. But we have an awesome wreck that we've already located the wreck. We just are waiting for the permission to go to work on it. But I'm also, you know, training some divers, and mm-hmm, I do technical scuba diving training for divers that want to dive deeper, stay longer. I just finished an advanced trimix class. We were last I was on Saturday, and we were in 300 on a shipwreck in 326 feet of water.
Jeez.
So and that kind of stuff is like totally fun. So you know, I am incredibly fortunate. I stay busy working on all kinds of little projects, and every once in a while somebody from TV gets interested. The book Shadow Divers, Rob Kirson, I had the opportunity to work with Rob Kirson twice.
Mm-hmm.
And Shadow Divers.
Yeah, I see you've done stuff for History Channel, for, you know, you had the Deep Sea Detectives, and it looked like you've done a bunch of TV stuff, too.
Yeah, you know, and to tell you the truth, I shot a lot of video for industry, too.
Right.
And but Universal Pictures is trying to come up with a turn Shadow Dice into a big screen film project.
That's awesome.
So, you know, God forbid they do something like that. And of course, if they did that, I would, you know, I'd be the guy hanging out there every day.
So, John, where can people go to see your work and check out? I know you have a blog and whatnot. Where should they go?
What? You know what? I have a website, johnchatterton.com. Whatever I'm kind of doing is going to be on there. I'm pretty good about keeping it current and all that kind of thing. And I'm also on Facebook, so I'm not that hard to find.
unless you're 327 feet underwater.
you know, somehow that last 300 feet can be a problem. But you know, if you put it in perspective, you know, in 2005, I went to Titanic. We put together a Titanic expedition for the History Channel. And now Titanic is 12,500 feet deep. So by comparison, 330 feet is
nothing.
Near bag of shells.
Mm.
Yeah. John, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, man. And good luck with all the dives you got coming up. And, you know, maybe we'll talk again. I have a lot of other questions for you, but we are running short on time here.
Cool, man.
Thanks so
good
much, John.
Good talking to you, and we'll do it again sometime.
We just got to do everything underwater.
Next, we got to get the cast from Deep Blue Sea.
We got to get the model who was the Gordon's fisherman onto the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, someone.
What'd you do after that? That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you guys find me? We got our man.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy what people do for a living and what I do for a living.
Yeah.
But, we got to switch gears real quick because we have another guest.
I was about to ask if we still had him or not.
Yeah, I messaged him during that we were running a little late. Burley, you like to play tag?
I did back in my day.
Great segue.
No, Scott, I hate it. I hate everything about it. Why?
Well, I was on the other day. I saw a video, and apparently, tag is now a professional sport.
Oh.
It's called World Chase Tag.
Interesting.
So I reached out to these guys a few weeks ago, and we're going to talk to Christian, hopefully here, from World Chase Tag, and we'll get a little insight on what this is all about. So let's get going. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, that's the sweet stuff. Here we go now.
Hello?
Hey, is this Christian?
Hi, how are you? I'm here with Damien, my brother, as well.
Hi.
Was that David, you said?
Damien.
Guys, sorry for the delay. We had a little bit of a couple-minute delay there. But thanks for giving us a few minutes, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott here, and this is my buddy Mike.
Evening, boys.
Hi.
So where are we calling to right now? Where are you guys located?
We're in Datchet, in England.
Oh.
It's near Heathrow Airport. West London, west of London.
Oh, okay.
I
was saying, I saw how I got in touch with you guys. I saw scrolling through Facebook one day, and I saw your little video, and I'm like, what the hell is this? and I see a bunch of guys running around, and it was saying something that tag is, you know, now a professional sport or a sport, and I'm watching it, and we'll get into, like, some of the things you guys do, but where did you guys come up with this idea?
Well, it starts. I mean, like, it's tag, right? So everybody played tag. So it's not. I can't really claim that it's like my idea as such.
But, I wouldn't believe if you said I invented tag. I'm sorry, I'm just not that stupid.
My great great grandfather in London.
Yeah, there's this game, right? It's called tag. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, my son always used to, like, he was athletic and he's agile and everything, but he never really liked playing normal sport, you know? And so he was always trying to have a go, like, let's play it. In England, we call it it, yeah?
God, you guys mess up everything.
Let's play it.
Yeah,
right. You know?
In Wales, they call it Shibuti. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
Yeah, I've got a whole list of names, actually. The weirdest one is, I was looking up, what's it called? I wish I remember the name that it was. But in Brazil, the word that they call it in Brazil, which is Portuguese. Well, I wish I knew what it was. Anyway, it's...
we'll have Mike look it up while you...
It means like a porn search. It's something along the lines of, like, getting caught, yeah?
Okay.
So I started to look it up. Someone told me that in Brazil it's called this. So I started to look it up, and all these interesting things started to come out of
that. All right, so your son wants to play It or Tag or whatever the hell we want to call it.
And then, so we used to play It a lot. And then, like, you reach a certain age where he was about 8 at the time. And he said, you wanted to know, now let's take it to another level. Who's better out of me or him, you know? So we devised a system where we got a couple of iPhones, and one would time down for like 60 seconds, and the other one, I'd get someone to like watch. And as we were playing it, when you tag them, you would start and stop the stopper. So you knew like within the minute what each person's tag time was, yeah? So if you were on it for more than 30 seconds, then the other person won because they had a shorter tag time, you know?
Okay.
And so we thought, yeah, that's a pretty cool game. So we started to introduce obstacles in the garden, like benches or bins and pieces of wood and stuff. And then it just grew from that, you know? And there was a site called, you ever heard of a meetup site called, actually it's called Meetup, yeah?
Yes, yes.
And so I came across this site and I thought, well, let's start like a meetup in London during chase time. So so I put it together and we started to do meetups in Hyde Park. And then for the obstacles, we'd just get like barrier tape, wrap it around trees and stuff like that, use benches. And
now, how many disappointing meetups were there? It was just you playing tag with yourself. Oh, man, with the meetup sign.
The first one, well, we started in the summer. So the first one was really good. Yeah, we had some some people and we had a great, like, we had a crazy guy who ran into a tree, split his head open. and then the next few after that were pretty good too. And then as the winter came, it was about November. We were doing it about monthly. And Damien had gone to Japan. He goes to Japan quite a lot. And it was just me and my son. And it was pissing down rain. And once you schedule it on Meetup, you can't, because I don't know numbers, telephone numbers of people who are going to come. So you can't just say, well, I'm not going to come, you know. And I almost swore, by the way. What's the deal with swearing?
Say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I almost said, fuck it. You know, let's
Oh, my God. It. Anything but that? No. Go ahead.
Yeah. Not that one.
And it was pissing that rain. I just thought nobody is going to come, you know. And me and Lando were standing under a little umbrella, and then like bang on the time, like we said, like 11 o'clock. There was this Japanese guy, and he literally as soon as my watch said 11 o'clock, he just came around the corner, you know. And then this French girl came, you know, and she was dressed in, like, she was quite well dressed, like quite a nice pair of jeans, but she was it was November, you know, and we were slipping and sliding. We got completely muddy. I couldn't believe this girl was playing, you know, but yeah, we had a good laugh. And then after that, we started to do a bit more stuff indoors, and I started to get some plastic obstacles made out of like guttering, you know, plastic guttering, because they were easy to carry. And we would set up a few things. And then what happened was, at the beginning, we were getting quite a lot of, like, women coming and older people who treated it as a sort of...
Who would have known the secret to getting women to come meet up with Tag?
Scott, they really run when I try to touch them, just for the record.
I can't say that I could take advantage of the situation. Yeah.
Mike calls. He says he's been playing hide and seek with women for years.
Hide and seek, you see, that's the wrong approach. Yeah,
still can't find them. Still can't find them. You never will.
Anyway, I'm touching people, you know.
No, that's like it's COVID. Hiding and then pouncing out.
So,
but then there was a crucial time when we went into a parkour gym. And the parkour gym, I think things changed quite a lot when we went into a parkour gym. We used this gym in London called our Parkour Generation. And they had some really, really good equipment. And so the obstacles started to become a bit more robust. And because the parkour athletes were there, they started to join in. And once the parkour athletes started to join in, then the standard completely changed, and it became a lot more alpha male, you know, and kind of all of the older women disappeared. Just a bunch of young alpha males who kick our ass, you know. So Mike, yeah, I might join you with a hide and seek.
So, I mean, from my childhood of playing tag, I know this gotta be a constant thing. How do you guys rule on the, hey, I tagged you, nuh-uh, no you didn't kind of deal?
Well, we make it so that it's up to the chase's responsibility to make it obvious. So he has to kind of make it obvious. But usually when we film it, we usually have a lot of cameras. So if anyone is too kind of cheeky with telling they didn't get caught, it's happened quite a few times that someone said they didn't get caught. And you look back in the camera and you can definitely see they got caught. Mm. Luckily, it hasn't happened in the competition yet, but we have a kind of policy now that we'll name and shame. Anyone that says they didn't get caught and it gets caught on camera, we'll name and shame them and put out the video afterwards.
All right, let's get into this a little bit. So it went from this meetup group. Now, did you have the intention of making this like a, or did you originally have the intention of like, hey, this could be like an actual sport like that we could play? Or did that idea start to grow? Like when, like you said, you met the parkour guys and whatnot. And then two, where did it go from concept to an actual thing? Like you said, you got cameras and I've seen the videos. It's pretty impressive. It looks, it looks pretty legit. So where did it go from concept to an actual, you know, putting this thing in place?
Well, as soon as we played that first game, when we timed it, at that point, I thought straight away, I thought this is wicked. This could be really, really good. And my background is hotels, yeah? So I'd actually worked 20 years in hotels. And I was working at the time that this was happening. And so I thought, this would be really good to do, but I can't do anything about it. And I met this, I don't know if you ever heard of a channel on, here we have Sky. In England, there's
a lot of soccer games are on that.
Sky Sports?
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
When you first got Sky, going back now, like literally 15, 20 years ago, when Sky, you'd get the satellite dish and there were some free channels on it. And, there was a free channel on it called Extreme. And the guy who started this Extreme channel was a guy called Al Gosling. And I think the channel's now been bought up by someone else and stuff. But this guy, Al, I met him once because he wanted to get into... Because he made like a ton of money. Like, I don't know, at one point maybe like 50 million or something like that. And he wanted to go like have Extreme hotels, yeah? Which I didn't think was a particularly good idea. But I met him at a conference. And I was thinking, so I was friends with him on LinkedIn or something. And I was thinking, yeah, maybe I should just tell him about this idea. And then, it'd be great. I'd love to see it, you know, in place. But I never got around to doing it. And so I sort of put it out of my mind, you know. And then a couple of years later, the recession hit, you know, 2008, like things. And it was really difficult in hotels. But we struggled through, and the company that was working eventually got sold, and the people I was working with, they wanted me to relocate into... Are you there? I heard a...
Oh, yeah, yep. We're there, yeah.
Yeah, and so I didn't want to relocate to Croatia, where they had a lot of these hotels, and so I decided I would look at different things, and I was about transferable skills and all that crap that Mike is going through at the moment, yeah. And still going to that, Mike. I've been to a couple of your other podcasts, so I feel and so anyway, I was going through that, and then this idea started to come back. So at that point, even though we were doing the minor meetups, it was at the back of my mind, actually. Yeah, I could maybe, you know, I could do something with this, you know. And so I spoke to a patent lawyer about... I was wondering if the idea for this timing system could be patentable. And I couldn't afford to go to like a swanky like law firm that charged like £200 an hour or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I came across this guy who was just, you work for yourself. And apparently I heard later on that patent lawyers, they tend to be quite intellectual people. So a lot of them, they can't deal with like law firms and be, you know, they like to be able to deal with themselves. So, and it's better if you find a guy like this, if you could manage to get through all that intellectual stuff, you know. And so I found this guy, and he's a really nice guy. And he wrote this, we drafted this patent document. And it's really, it was like the most tediously boring thing that you could, it was something like 4,000 words long. Talking about,
and you could read it and not know it was about tag. You could read it. Talking about tag. You know what I mean? It's really weird. Yeah.
So yeah, I did that, and then, but actually having a timing, having a patent and a timing system is kind of useless,
right?
Because like, unless you do something, make the tag, make it a proper sport, and then your patent might be worth something. And so I thought, okay, well, let's set about now trying to make a sport. So, you know, we did various things, came up with different formats. And then, and actually, we probably delayed it a bit too long. But, you know, timing is one of those things. And we did, so that footage that you saw, it's probably, we've only done one major competition.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And then the footage just went, it just blew up, you know.
Oh, I mean, it blew, so this is relatively new then?
Yeah, it was in December.
Okay, yeah. Huh. Now, give us, I'm on your site now, and I see a lot of different rules and terminology and stuff like that. Give us like a quick rundown of what we would expect if we were to go to the next Chase Tag event. What are the rules of tag chase or whatever you got, chase tag?
Well, we've actually got an event coming up on the 1st of July.
Okay.
And it's a similar format to the last one. The patent, what happens with the patent is for a multiplayer event where you have like four players and you play for a certain amount of time. And the person who stays on tag for the least amount of time wins. But the patent, the technology is very expensive to make. So we had to kind of work on a format that would be a bit simpler to play. And that's where we came up with the idea for doing one-on-ones instead. And that's what the competition is. So so the reason why we came up with the format we use in the competitions is just because it's a lot easier and we don't need the technology. But basically, each chase is 20 seconds long and has one chaser and one evader and one person from each team, because it's kind of like a team format. And how it works is that the winner stays on. So whoever wins stays on as the evader. And you get 1 point for each evasion that you make. And that's how it works, basically. You get 1 point for your team for each evasion you make.
So, you know how some sports, you need to be serving to score the point?
Right, yeah.
So it's like that. So yeah. you need to be evading.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
So, and it's winner stays on. So you tag someone, then you become the evader in the next chase. And then if you evade them for 20 seconds, you score a point.
Mm-hmm.
And what's a game too? Like, is it 21 or?
No, it's, we have a number of chases.
Okay.
Yeah? We're still sort of playing around with that, but it's probably be 16 chases in a set. And then a full match would be like the best of three sets or something like that.
Now, who's playing this? Like, are you just guys?
So our next event, I'll come on to that in a sec. Like, so our next event is on 1st of July in the London. We're calling it the London Chase Off. And we have three teams. We've got a team from France called Blacklist, which has this guy, Valentin Dubois. You know, like in America, of course, you call it American Ninja Warrior. But okay. In France, they call it, I don't know, they call it Ninja Warrior France, I think.
Yeah, probably.
creative name.
And the guy that won it in France last year, he's in a team.
Oh, nice.
And so they're pretty strong. So they're called Blacklist. Then if you know anything about parkour, you'd know about a team called Storm Freerun. They're maybe the most famous parkour team in the world. And so they're coming. They have like the speed champion, Joe Henderson, on their team. And then we have the winners of the last event in December called Marrero Gang. And then the fourth team that we have was the winner from the qualifier that we just had yesterday in Swansea. And so we were all weekend sleeping in the back of a van with how many of us? There were nine of us in the. I rented a, like a 7.5-ton truck to carry all the equipment over there,
huh.
And it doubled up once the truck was empty as our
accommodation. Like,
yeah,
athlete accommodation.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're all in. Like, I mean, you got events coming up. You got obviously some names in I guess sports that are similar and whatnot. Is this thing, has this thing turned profitable at all? And if so, what does the winner, are they coming just to help you out and play the game, or is there a prize to also for the winner?
The parkour, a lot of the participants, not all of them, but a lot of them are parkour athletes. And parkour athletes, there's a dilemma in the world of parkour, because parkour as a discipline is generally about like training and bettering yourself and all that sort of stuff. And there's a fraction in parkour that want to do competition to make themselves, because some of these people train like 10 hours a day. They go out every day, they train hard, and the stuff that they do is incredible. But they have no formal way to make money, right? Like they do in other sports, right? So there, a few parkour competitions have begun to take place where there is a bit of cash involved. But there's a dilemma in that, because some people are against parkour being as a competition and that sort of thing. You know, so I really feel sorry for the parkour athletes, because they don't have a set way that they could start turning pro and making money from the things they do. So a lot of them have to do stunt work, or they have to teach it or something like that, you know. And so we've been really lucky that they just enjoy what we do, and they wanted to take part of, just off their own funding, you know. Like I really like the guys that are coming over from France. I wish I was in a position to be able to sort of, you know, pay them and or for them to win some decent money, but because they've got expense traveling over here, mm-hmm. and these are amazing, amazing guys, yeah. I think we've had so much interest, and not just from like in America and like New Jersey, like
not just America, New Jersey, Scott.
Yes, yes.
New Jersey is America, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
Last
baby.
We checked. Yeah. So I gotta ask you, as you're bringing over the equipment and doing new events, is the plan to mix up the field every time you have an event, or is it just like a standard thing, like a regular like soccer field?
It's evolved a bit since we've... What happened in the last competition was that the chases were very short, and it was too easy to get cooked. So the chases were quite short, and what we found that the evasion rate was quite low. Not many people were getting evasion, so not many points were being scored. And so what we tried to do this time, we've kept the basic structure of the court, but we've added a bit more complexity to it. So there's a bit more protection for the evader. So it changes a bit, but because it's quite a big court. It's like 12 meters by 12 meters. Our garden can't fit that at all. So we can only set up quarter by quarter. Do you know what I mean? Quarter at a time. You have to shift it over, set it the next quarter. So it's not something we can set it very often. So we can't make too many changes because we hardly ever get a chance to set up, you know. So it's kind of, it's changed a bit since last time, but it's kind of a standard kind of thing, yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting. So what is the what's the future here for this? And the goals? What are the two of you personally goals? And also, do you two still play, or are you all about like just running the league now?
Actually, it's a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, it is embarrassing.
I got last time I played, I got clapped a round of applause. That sort of that condescending, like an old man kind.
So
of
you've been phased out of your own sport.
Yeah, exactly. but the goal is just to make an exciting spectator sport, basically.
Right.
Just to turn it into, you know, because it is, even though it sounds kind of over ambitious, it already is a kind of global sport, and we want to turn it into a global sport, and like an acknowledged global sport. That would be our kind of mission. We want to see the best people chase, basically. That's what we want to see, the best athletes chase.
That's why Americans aren't involved.
No, but we really want to bring it to America, because, you know, it can't be a sport unless it comes to New Jersey.
That's correct. Uh-huh. That's correct. Yeah, I mean,
it's all to do with sponsorship. The thing is, yeah. And actually, relative to other sports, you know, we've got, you know, for us, for an individual to fork out, like, say, 10K on pounds, that is, on scaffolding and boards, that's quite a lot of money. It's quite a lot of money. But in the big scheme of things, yeah, like, if you, how much does it cost to AstroTurf even an indoor football pitch or soccer pitch?
A lot.
So actually, for us, it's actually, our court is not that expensive. But what we do is actually not relatively speaking, it's not expensive. You don't need it. You don't need, like, how much does it cost if one ice hockey player goes out onto the rink? What's the price of all that crap he's got on?
Yeah, it's hockey's expensive. Yeah. Hockey in general is.
Is it more than American football? Because they must wear.
I would say so. Between the skates, the gloves, the sticks, the shin pads, the hockey pads, shoulder pads. So
yeah, us, we need a pair of shoes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, we've had the pleasure of, in the last few months especially, we've talked to a lot of these niche sports athletes. We talked to a wake surfer. We talked to someone else. Oh, a kayak professional kayaker, a Red Bull diver. And you guys fit right into that. You know, like, I just see the very beginning of it. And, you know.
But what's interesting about those things you mentioned is that with all those other sports, you need to be in a certain place. I'm in Datchet. I can't cliff dive. Do you know what I mean? In Datchet. Or I can't. I mean, I guess I could kayak if there's a lake nearby. Right. But all you need basically is a flat piece of ground. You know, you don't need
a flat piece of ground.
Yeah. Well, you can use any piece of ground. Right. And so it's a universal thing. And it's the only game that children just play automatically, no matter of the environment. People play it in, you know, all countries around the world. So in a way, it is a niche sport, but it shouldn't be considered a niche sport. Do you know what I mean?
I remember I was watching a documentary, because I quite like, and I love, in terms of sport, one of my favorite sporting occasions is the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Football or
next
soccer.
Year already. I can't wait.
And I was watching last one in Brazil, and they had David Beckham went to meet some tribal guy in the Amazon forest, you know, and he's being introduced to this tribal leader, and the guy didn't know who Beckham was, you know, and Beckham was describing what he did for a living. And like he was portrayed, I think this leader of this tribe was told that David Beckham is the leader of his tribe or something like that. So he was saying, it was all subtitled. So he was saying, so what do you do? He said, ask this to Beckham, and he's going, football. And the tribal guy goes, what's football, right? And this is in Brazil, right? And although he's in the middle of the Amazon, so he didn't have a TV or anything like that, right? And so Beckham is trying to describe football. And he's saying, yeah, you have a ball and you kick the ball around and other people are chasing you and stuff. And you could see the leader was looking at him like he was nuts. And you think, like, and you can provide your family. You could be doing all this, like, thing. And Beckham was sort of, he was sort of scratching his head, you know, and thinking, well, yeah, I can, you know. And it was, you know, there we were, World Cup in Brazil, and this guy didn't know what football was.
Yeah.
And behind him, the little kids were playing it or tag. Yeah.
So you're saying this is going to be the biggest sport in the Amazon in about 2 years?
Yeah.
That dude who didn't know soccer will know chase tag.
Yes.
It's already in the Amazon.
Well, guys, we wish you the best of luck. I mean, it looks cool. You know, like, I hope it does take off, and I think you got a good start, and you definitely have, you know, it's cool to see that everything is kind of laid out and well thought out. So hopefully it continues to grow for you guys, and thanks for giving us a few minutes on the show.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. Been our pleasure.
Yeah.
Good luck, Mike, with the, you know, if it doesn't work out, you will. Yeah. I listened to that thing with crazy job.
I'm going to work on my parkour, and I think I can grab some women after this. Don't quote me on that, at least not to the judges.
Can I please videotape it?
Our motto that we hashtag is don't get caught. Yeah.
There you go. If you ever need a commentator, I'm down to be the voice of World Chase Tag.
Okay, cool.
Actually, we do actually need a commentator, funnily enough. Yeah. So,
Well, just fly me out to England, and I'm in.
Okay. Actually, yeah. First of July. No. If you're here for 1st of July, then you're in.
Can you say? What's your name? Your surname?
Scott Brennan.
Yeah. No, and the other one, Mike.
Michael Berlew.
Yeah. Can you say your name, your surname, and don't get caught?
Yeah, this is Scott Brennan here with World Chase Tag. Don't get caught.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
that's good, right? That's good. That's good. That really made people moist.
Yeah. Let me hear Mike. I am quite moist. Mike can finish me off now.
Michael Berlew here for World Chase Tag. Don't get caught.
That was good. There's a lot of drama there.
That sounded awesome. Like a new Stallone movie coming out. But guys, where can people go to check it out and get more information on the sport?
Facebook page. We got an event coming up on the 1st of July. All the information is on the Facebook page. We'll have a lot of information coming out, in the next month or so, building it up, and about the qualifiers and more footage coming out soon. So yeah, just log on to Facebook World Chase Tag and check it out. We're also on Instagram and YouTube, but Facebook is probably the most active one with the most information and stuff.
Awesome, man.
Scott, I just realized this is the second English athlete we've had on the show now.
The second English athlete.
Yeah. Sharon Alexander.
Oh, yeah. Sharon. We had a female sumo wrestler on.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. English female sumo.
Now, if you can get her to play World Chase Tag, yeah. I will never stop watching.
We had an idea to kind of have we had a weird idea, just coming up with different weird formats. We had an idea of having one parkour athlete, and then you put him in for 20 seconds with a sumo wrestler. And then you put in another sumo wrestler, then another one. You see how many sumos he can run away from.
My passport ready. I'm headed down there.
The problem is having so much access to sumo wrestlers. Where are you getting these truckloads of sumo wrestlers?
Yeah, we might need more than 3 trucks to carry them.
I like it, though. I like it.
The winning idea, do you know what I mean?
But guys, thanks so much, and this will be out next week, and I'll send you the link and tag you all in it and whatnot. So,
but don't bunch.
Tag in it. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's tag humor. But thanks again, guys.
All right, okay, cool.
Take care, boys.
Okay, care. Cheers. See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. All right.
Intriguing.
Yeah, definitely intriguing. It's cool to hear
how much credit, man. I mean, that idea's been out there forever, and they're the ones that came up with, putting more details.
I mean, it's cool. It's cool how organized it is, and reading the rules and whatnot. There's definitely a market for it. I mean, there's a market for everything.
Coming out next year, my Duck Duck Goose tournament is going to be huge.
Yes.
Only the best athletes will be participating. John, this guy's got a great strategy. You know, he's known for the most ducks.
I got to find a way to get out there on July 1st be the official commentator of World Chase Tag. Good, it'd be great to put on your resume.
I'll play.
But yeah, man, that was cool. Let's take a quick break.
This is Verbal Shenanigans, bad for business. Tweets, advertising, and things said that shouldn't have been. On March 16, 2015, an eager Micah Berlew jumped onto Twitter to try to get guests on the podcast, reaching out to Capadonna, a known member of Wu-Tang. In an attempt to get him on the show, Michael Berlew tweeted, "Hey Cap, big supporter of the clan."
See, big supporter of the clan.
And that is Verbal Shenanigans, bad for business.
All right. So now we're done with our guest and our insane politic talk. Tiring politic talk. It just gets you every time. Yep. outrage, you know. Did you you watch any of the Stanley Cup?
I've watched a few of it, yeah.
I think the game's on tonight, right?
Yep, game four down in Nashville. Some of the craziest fans out there, man.
Well, yeah, did you see how the catfish got thrown onto the...
Yeah.
Yeah. did you read the story behind?
Yeah, it was very intricate how he... My favorite part is how he ran it over with a car to flatten it so he can get it down his long johns.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go through this since, you know, a lot of people might not know what the heck is going on here. So, a criminal complaint released Tuesday morning in Pittsburgh... In the Pittsburgh catfish tossing, gave a brief summary of how the crime was committed, but omitted all the best details. Jacob Waddle, which I tried to reach out to and find to see if he would do it in an interview, can't find him. He's probably laying low right now.
Yeah.
Is a 36-year-old Tennessee man fessed up to the cops that he threw the dead fish, but the police report didn't give the whole complicated story. Waddle went on Nashville radio station 104.5. Maybe we can find him. Maybe I didn't look hard enough.
Yeah.
What follows is a timeline of Waddle's journey to the fish toss. This is pretty epic.
All right.
Okay. So, naturally, he needed to first acquire the catfish.
Okay? Yeah, that's always a good start.
Yeah. He said he purchased it back home, not because Pittsburgh fishmongers were refusing to sell them to Tennesseans, but because he thought it would be more fitting to throw a Nashville catfish. Real authentic Nashville catfish.
You think when it hit the ice, they're like, no, not Nashville!
Yeah. I remember, like, when the Devils played the Red Wings, and I watched the... when the Devils beat the Red Wings in the Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. I remember Brodeur talking about how he'd hide in the net when all the octopus were being thrown. And he said they were just disgusting, and he'd like poke them with a stick to like flick them away. Just hundreds
sometimes
of
they
them.
Throw live ones, too.
People are weird.
Mm-hmm.
So this created a problem for Waddle. How is he supposed to transport a rotting fish 600 miles to Pittsburgh? The solution was to put it in an ice cooler and drench it in cologne and body spray. So
axe to get your catfish through.
Keep your fish clean. all right. So the next issue was finding a way to sneak the fish into the arena. His initial plan, being from Tennessee, was to slip the fish down the leg of his cowboy boot.
Okay, interesting theory.
I tried putting it in my boot, but the head was too damn big, Waddle said. No matter how much I ran it over with the truck, the head was too damn big. Meaning he probably tried it like multiple times fitting this fish.
Pay less?
Into his leg.
Do you have a wide leg boot? You know, where you can
fit. He needs those Jankos. Those Jankos are huge. Sorry. I forgot to mention that part where he ran it over with his truck.
Yeah.
In an attempt to make the fish a more manageable size, Waddle brought it over his cousin Troy's place. So there's like people in on this. Like, all right, Troy, you need to run this fish over with your truck.
Yeah!
Troy filleted and cut out half of the spine, which is why it looked so mangled on TV. Waddle also attempted to flatten the fish by running it over this pickup truck so it fit down my crotch. Okay. So when the boot scheme failed, Waddle decided to put the mutilated fish down the front of his pants.
Mm-hmm.
I had two pairs of underwear on, he explained. Regular underwear on. Then he put compression shorts on and slipped that between the two and walked right into the arena. Getting close enough to the ice to actually throw the fish proved to be another challenge. Waddle and Troy bought a pair of tickets in the upper bowl for $350 each.
Wow.
But needed to get down to the lower bowl so Waddle can sprint down the aisle and toss the fish. That's where Troy's military training came in.
Oh, of course.
Troy's an army vet, so he's pretty good at scoping it out. I almost got caught once, had to hightail it out of there, went to a different section. I find two Predators fans that came out during intermission who had e-tickets. They screenshot their tickets and text them to me. It's that simple, which is beyond imagination to me. They sent those to me. I go down to the section. Turns out I didn't even need it because they weren't even checking. Then it was the moment of truth. As soon as there's a break in play, they get the face-off. I just hightail it right down to the ice, water recalled. I take the shirt that was covering the fish off, take the towel off, almost drop it backwards. You can kind of see me re-grab it, and then just hurled it onto the ice. Waddle was apprehended by stadium security pretty quickly and now faces three misdemeanor charges, though he called them trumped up and believes they will be dropped, and he doesn't regret a thing. It was absolutely worth it 10 times. It's absolutely 10 times over worth it, and I would do it 1,000 more times.
You think there's a story where, like, ISIS is in Afghanistan and all of a sudden as they're planning something, a big catfish comes out of nowhere and lands near them before a bomb goes off?
I just love the commitment here. I love the putting it down as pants.
I didn't know there was so much thought into catfish throwing.
spraying it with cologne to cover the fish smell, jamming it in his compression shorts. This man is a hero, and we're going to get him on the podcast. I know it. We're going to find him.
I mean, was he worried, really? Like, the guy patted him down, like, sir, you got a weird odor to you. Please step aside.
I mean, just let the guy go. Yeah. Slap him on the head and give him, like, a $100 fine.
There was also a thing at the Dover race where the guy climbed up the gateway, the catch can, and he was just hanging up there after the race. Did you see this?
No.
There's a little picture there as he's probably about a good 100 feet in the air on basically chain link fence. I mean, I give him more credit for the guts to stay up there.
How many PBRs do you think that guy drank before? Or probably Budweiser.
Well, let's keep in mind, NASCAR is the only sport where you're allowed to bring in a cooler. It's so pretty ridiculous. That's a minimum 5 or 6.
That's a case. I think I had a case. Yeah. It takes a lot of balls to throw. I never understood the streaking or the climbing up. Or you know you're getting arrested. Like, you know the next couple of days are going to really be bad.
I actually went to a Pocono race where I was in the stands, and Tony Stewart won. He was known for climbing up the fence.
Right.
So one guy climbed up all the way up to the top, went woo, woo, got down, and we were all shocked that we didn't see any security running over to grab him. But the idiot decided, nope, that ain't good enough, and he went right back up there and waited for security.
When I was in college, I might have told this story before, but we were in the Division like 3 tournament, like the finals of the tournament, and our basketball team won in like overtime or something like that. And I think I had like, I don't know, we all pregame before the game, and a bunch of, it was I still remember, Bacardio and Sprite, that was like what we had. Wow. And
well, that's a training drink right there.
And like, they're about to win, and I'm like, and I go out on the court, and everybody's like, I got trampled by like the center of the basketball team. So they all came together. I remember getting kicked in the face like 3 times before like the rest of
love you guys.
It was, and this is like Division 3 college ball, you know, like maybe 100 kids stormed the court most, like, but it was, I remember getting kicked in the head by the center. He was a big, big African man, but fun event. What do you got?
Good time. Let me ask, when you're watching a movie at home, what are your thoughts on people talking to you during the movie?
Obviously, don't like it.
Don't like? I mean, some people are conversationalists and stuff like that, but...
Well, it's pretty funny you say that, because the other day I watched Get Out.
Great movie.
Yeah, it was good. I watched it with Alex, and she's like, I don't want to watch it. It's going to be scary. I'm like, just come on. Just watch it. It's not that scary. I mean, it's by the guy from Key and Peele. It's going to have some humor to it. Like, come on. But I don't know. So like, 10 minutes in, she's already like, I don't know if I can do this. This is scary. And I'm like, come on. Just watch it. So eventually
Alex has got a very sexy voice so far, just for the heads up.
So she turns over, and she's half... She's like, watching it with her ears, like, listening. And she's like, and like slowly, she's like, 3/4 turn. And then finally, she's watching it. So then, like, she's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. At one point, where the climax is coming, she's like, I can't do it. And she's, like, peeking through her hands, like a little kid, like, stop. Is he going to die? Is he going to die? Scott, is he going to die? And I'm like, oh, my God. She's, like, just loses it, like, when it comes to the movie. She, like, has a conversation, like, what's going through her head. And she just gets, like, oh, no. He's not going to die, is he? So, I mean, that was kind of fun, but I'm not really about, like, asking questions, unless it's, like, a confused, you know, they're like, what happened here? But other than, like, full conversation, no.
I can't say it. So, like, Sunday night, really nothing going on, you know, all the TV series are pretty much over, it's the summertime, they're putting on repeats or shows that are just rejects and so forth, so...
Right.
Flipping through the channels, and Izzy's like, oh, have you ever seen 8 Men Out before? I'm like, no, I haven't seen the full
movie. 8 Men Out?
Yeah, that's the movie about the Black Sox.
Oh, okay.
So, I've never seen it before, and she's like, oh, this is a great movie, you gotta see it. And we were starting to watch it. It's midway through, unfortunately, and we're trying to see if we get it on YouTube or Hulu or whatever, and it's not on anything. I'm like, alright, let me just concentrate on these scenes from here. Okay. And there is, she is just talking and talking and talking. And I'm like, you just told me, have you ever seen it? No. Oh, you gotta watch it. And then she's just going on about, oh, look at the puppies on Facebook. And I'm like, babe, I'm trying to watch it. And at one point, there's that a scene, and I realize Michael Rooker is in the film. He played Merle in right. Walking Dead. I'm like, oh, there's Merle. Where? On the TV. Where? The guy talking. Which one? The one with his lips moving. It just got to the furious point. It's just like, good, I'm glad they're all out of baseball, okay? I don't care.
So did this end up in a fight?
Or? It did end up in a fight, but it was just one of those annoying things where you just look at it like, all right, you want me to
watch
appreciate
the movie.
And enjoy this movie. Meanwhile, you want to prevent me from hearing anything significant in the movie.
Yeah, it's like the people who talk during the movie theater. Like, they're like, ah, ah, like, you're like, shut up, shut up. Or like, I don't know, bringing kids to. Last movie we saw, I don't remember what movie we saw in the theater.
I saw Wonder Woman.
I heard it was good.
Yeah, it was barely damn good.
Yeah.
They finally got it right, DC.
I don't remember what we saw, but it was something that a kid shouldn't have been at. And there was like a baby like crying during like half the movie. Like, what are you doing? People are like, shut up! Like, stop it! Like, get him out of here!
Yeah. I saw Freddy versus Jason in the movie, and they brought a kid there. And like the first scene, kind of an homage to 80s horror movies, a girl shows her breasts, and you hear like a 5-year ew! And then all
it was
of a sudden,
actually you.
No. And then Jason starts chopping up people, and it's like, get the.
Like, go,
how did
what
you,
are you
think
doing?
This would work with a 6-year-old?
Like, what? Why? Why? I don't know.
Why ask why? Yep. Bud dry.
But I think it's time to get out of here. We've been going for quite a while. I got some things I'll say for next week. Anything to promote?
I'll promote our friend Randy Santel, foodchallenges.com. He's currently doing a tour in Australia right now, so those films should be up soon. Currently, he's showing his previous attempts over in Europe, some new countries like Germany, Belgium, and so forth. So you can go on youtube.com/Randy Santel or look up his site, foodchallenges.com.
Yeah, I'm going to I'll promote a friend of the cast this time rather than our
we got buddies.
Selfish selfs. But I'm going to promote last night we had a show at Table 42, and Mark Riccadonna, good friend, just a great guy, as always. But he has a podcast that he's been starting up lately. It's called the I Did That Show. Okay, it's called the I Did That. And basically they take a topic that they did when they were kids and they try to talk about it like now and see if it holds up. And Erin McGuire was a guest on it today, and she was also on the show last night. So I figured, why not promote the cast? And hopefully, I think I might be joining them eventually sometime in the summer to do an episode. So we'll see. But all right. Go check out the I Did That Show with Mark Riccadonna and company.
Very nice.
So I'll do anything to support that guy. And then I'll just talk about ourselves. Please share the show, guys. We've done a lot of cool episodes. We got a couple good ones coming up also. If you go back last week, we did the guys from Coheed and Cambria and Steven Seagal before that. And I don't know, Dave Andrewchuk a couple weeks before that and Victor Wooten. So there's a lot. If this is the first one you're hearing and you like what you hear, there's so many different episodes that we are very happy about. Go back to even to last year, and you'll get some really interesting ones. Just scroll through our page, and it's just episode after episode. There's 150-something of them. So,
crazy.
Yeah, don't go back to, like, the 20s. Those episodes suck. Nah. But
go back to episode 12, the slam dunk contest. That has, like, 15 listens, if I recall.
Oh, good. That's 15 too many. But, yeah, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter and all that. You're not stupid. You can Google it. But the best thing you can do is share it with your friends. With that, life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Yeah,
it goes a little something like this. Tag team, back again. Check it, direct it, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoices. There's a party over here, a party over there, wave your hands.
Nobody remembers this part of the song, ever.
Say, whoop, that is Hitman.